A number of bills have come through the Cabinet today for introduction. Obviously, they're not bills that are looking to be processed through Parliament this side of the election, but proud of Government's ongoing programme. So there's the Inquiries Bill, which arises out of the Law Commission's report on public inquiries, which looked to streamline the inquiries or menu of inquiries that government has at its disposal when it wants issues inquired into. That's in the name of Rick Barker as Minister of Internal Affairs. There's an Employment Relations Amendment number 3. This bill has in it the provisions to improve the way in which casualised or non-standard employment conditions are dealt with in law. That was announced by Trevor Mallard, probably going back to June when the policy was agreed on. There is a taxation bill ready which deals with the decisions which were made earlier in the year about the treatment of stapled stock. There's a Cultural Property Protection in Armed Conflict Bill. This is legislation which enables New Zealand to ratify 2 protocols to an international convention. There's been a process through the Select Committee on the ratification of the convention. Phil Goff was able to sign it on my behalf in Paris a few weeks ago, and we're now moving with the legislation to enable us to ratify the protocols. There's a Building Amendment number 2 bill, streamlining the building consent process. Issues dealt with there are matters Shane Jones announced a few weeks ago after the Cabinet Policy Committee took decisions. Otherwise, we've authorised our officials to proceed with air service negotiations with the European Union and also with Japan. The EU negotiation is of particular interest. We've been advocating to get in the door to be able to negotiate this for some time, and the way is now clear to do that. We've also agreed on changes to the Code of Practice on the Pastoral Care of International Students. That, again, has been out for public consultation. Feedback's been received and the government's made decisions on that. I have a press statement about the visit of the East Timor Prime Minister, Xanana Gusmao. He is coming to New Zealand on Thursday for a two-night, three-day visit. Following on his visit to Australia, he'll be coming straight to Wellington on Wednesday afternoon. There'll be a meeting with me and Cabinet Ministers at 4 o'clock, and I will be hosting him to a dinner with ministers and officials in the evening. He'll also meet, while he's here, Phil Goff in Auckland and other ministers. The purpose of the visit really is to very much register East Timor's appreciation of all the work New Zealand has done there since 1999, continuing on since independence, and then, of course, going back in considerable numbers since the most unfortunate rioting broke out more than a year ago. So that will be a positive visit. Now, coming up in the House this week, as all can see, there is a lot of legislation on the order paper. It's expected that at some point in the remaining sitting weeks there will be a little urgency. None is planned for this week. It's not the government's intention to try and clear the order paper before the election. We're prioritising what we deal with and what we don't in the remaining weeks for Parliament. So this week we'll be progressing the policing bill, which is the major rewrite of the Police Act, which Annette King and the police have been working on for quite some time. It's up to committee stage and we hope to give it a third reading. Also hope to progress the Public Transport Management Bill, the Walking Access Bill, and of course, as I'm asked every week, I say that negotiations around the emissions trading scheme are ongoing, but at such time as we are able to get a majority for proceeding with that bill, time will be made for that on the order paper. There's also a Members' Day this week, and the Members' Day will deal with the second and third readings combined of the Auckland Regional Amenities Bill, which Judith Tizard has been working on for quite a long time. It's been subject to a tremendous amount of advocacy from the major arts and heritage organisations and others within Auckland, and should go through with a good majority. There's also the Waste Minimisation Bill, which is in the name of the Green co-leader, Russell Norman, but is very strongly supported by the government as part of our waste minimisation strategy. And the objective is to pass that in this parliamentary term. And we're also up to the third reading of the Corrections Mothers with Babies Amendment Bill in Sue Bradford's name as well. Otherwise, coming up this week, David Cunliffe tomorrow will be releasing the criteria around grants from the Broadband Investment Fund, a key part of the strategy for rolling out faster broadband as announced in this year's budget. And I understand on Thursday he'll be releasing the update of the digital strategy. First one released 3 to 4 years ago, and it's now been substantially revised. Annette King will be at the Roading Conference in Auckland tomorrow, making a speech on those issues. Tomorrow there'll also be a signing with Wellington City by the Minister of Housing on the deed of agreement around the major partnership we have with Wellington City to modernise and upgrade their social housing. They have a major portfolio, and we have a joint venture with them, which we're investing around $250 million over a period of years to help. Otherwise, this week the social report will be coming out, Social Report 2008. And there'll be events on Friday around the 20th anniversary of the report by Dame Sylvia Cartwright on the unfortunate experiments which led to women's deaths at National Women's Hospital, a report released 20 years ago. Any questions?
When was the election date?
No news for you today.
Are you looking at the past sitting?
I really don't have anything to add to the answer I just gave to Barry.
You've obviously stacked up a lot.
Oh, there's a lot to do.
What level of confidence do you have at the moment in Mr. Peters following relations to the Privileges Committee?
I don't think it would be wise for me to comment on the proceedings of the Privileges Committee. It is the equivalent of Parliament's Court. There's a process going on there, and it should be allowed to work its way through.
You're obviously very confident that will be able to eventually muster a majority on the
election strategy. Negotiations are ongoing as we speak.
If you do get the numbers on it, how long will it take you to draft the legislation? What sort of delay are you expecting?
On the ETS?
Yes.
Oh, the ETS is poised for passage. So, back from the committee, a lot of work's been done. There's always some technical tidy-up as well, but no, it's poised for passage, pending securing a majority.
So you're not expecting to make major changes in relation to the negotiations?
Well, I don't really want to comment at all on what will come to Parliament in the form of the government SOP, as and when and if the bill comes. But we're continuing to talk with those whose support is critical to the bill's passage.
Have the Greens in New Zealand First or
your we're continuing to work with both parties.
Are you expecting a final answer from both tomorrow?
Not necessarily, no.
How much longer can you wait for?
Oh, well, it's how long's a piece of string? That would give you a clue to when the election was.
How disappointed will you be if it's not passed?
Well, I think it's a very important piece of legislation, and that's why we've put so much effort into working with others to muster a majority. As I've said here before, it will be a very significant election issue if the bill isn't passed. In fact, the climate change response will be a significant issue anyway because of the National Party's destructive tactics and really reversion to climate change denial at any opportunity.
What did you think was behind the Greens press conference last week to go back and consult the public on
I think that the Greens are very committed to being as open as they can with people about important decisions. I haven't really read anything more into it than that.
Both John Key and Bill English have described Maurice Williamson as being over-enthusiastic at the Super comments he made about policy around road tolls and motorway projects. What's your response to that explanation?
I think that's a rather sad attempt to put a gloss on what's obviously been a disaster. The agenda was secret until Maurice blurted it, and the prospect of having the $50 extra tax cut that promised the average worker snatched away by the weekly toll bill, of course, makes it clear that their policies are all about taking with one hand, giving with the other, but you don't end up any better off at all, and arguably worse. The problem was that Mr. Williamson strayed well beyond just his eulogising private roading and tolling into eulogising about the virtues of having the private sector build hospitals and schools, and of course prisons are very much in that frame for him as well. Now, New Zealand doesn't have particularly happy experience with the private money being brought in to build a public facility in the health system. Annette King has reminded me that when the Napier Hospital was closed, a building to house some kind of Napier super clinic health facility was built by the private sector with a lease agreement back to the District Health Board, which would at the end of the lease have seen the board pay $20 million in rent, I understand, with still no ownership at all. As a result, the new DHB, set up by the Labor-led government, bought back the building because the deal was so bad on the lease. So we really have been down these roads before with the National Party of partial privatisation of core social infrastructure, and the experience isn't a happy one. I found Bill English's comments on this morning extremely confusing because he seemed on the one hand to be trying to say the PPPs were a good idea, but then on the other that they were prepared to borrow more anyway to pay for it out of the public purse with the extra borrowing. So it's very hard to know where all that is going. Look, 5 years ago legislation went through Parliament which enabled there to be PPPs. One of the issues in New Zealand has always been getting projects of sufficient scale to even make that of interest. As is known, there's been work done following announcements in February in Michael Cullen's speech to the Auckland Chamber of Commerce around how to take forward the Waterview Connection, which is a major tunnel project linking State Highway 20's various components. And the report on that should be able to be released shortly. But it's an area where you have to tread fairly carefully because the examples are legendary of where these kinds of projects have backfired in governments' faces.
Why doesn't acceptable toll?
I don't really want to get into the realm of what's acceptable, but if you take the example of the Alpert B2, which connects Albany and Puhoi at the north of the North Shore suburban area, I understand that there was an agreement to bring forward that project by 10 years after consultation with the local community clearly indicated that it wished to pay a very modest toll to have the road built early, a decade early. And I understand that that toll would run at somewhere between $1.89 or $2 a day. Now, that, of course, would nowhere meet the cost of the road, but I understand that that was what was judged in all the discussion and consultation around the project to be within the realm of what might be acceptable.
Because Annette King this morning, for instance, said that if you actually wanted to fully fund transmission gully, for instance, with toll...
$10 each way.
Yeah, so...
And that's a very, very high price threshold.
One that would be unrealistic.
Very high price threshold.
Does the government have any plans or announcements forthcoming regarding rationalisation of the number of DHBs? Tony Ryle's quoted from a speech given by David Cameron state where there seems to be a hint in that direction?
No, we don't. But what David Cunliffe would have been talking about is some of the work that's being done around smaller DHBs, and in fact DHBs generally where it matters, clustering together to provide services. It's not about rationalising the numbers of DHBs. No, not at all. Not at all. I think the reverse would be true.
Prime Minister, the government made a decision on the civilian use nuclear agreement between India and the US.
What we're doing is working with quite a number of like-minded countries, large and small, on the issue in Vienna, where the discussion is going on. Now, the matter has been before the International Atomic Energy Agency's board. It's now gone to the Nuclear Suppliers Group for discussion, and New Zealand's a member of that group. We're not currently on the IAEA board. And we're working with others around conditions which might need to be added. That's really all I can say. It's an ongoing discussion.
So New Zealand will go along with an agreement that can be reached with a number of other countries. New Zealand won't be taking a separate stand on the issue.
Well, it very much depends where the issue ends up. But what we're finding is that there are quite a lot of countries, including significantly sized and powerful countries, who share very much the same kinds of concerns as New Zealand has raised. So we're continuing to work those issues through with others and with the parties to the agreement.
And there's a decision this week, is it?
No, there's no decision this week. I don't think the group's actually meeting this week.
Is it realistic for India to join the NPT at this late stage?
Well, they've never joined to date, so I wouldn't be expecting that they would be agreeing to join now.
Well, as much as you may have cost per meal at the Olympic Games, is the money well spent?
I don't begrudge a single cent of the money spent preparing our athletes for the Olympics. I think we got fantastic value. I think most Kiwis feel very proud of the achievements of the team. And now we'll need to see the detailed debrief from the Sport and Recreation Agency, and look at how much needs to go into the next effort. The reality is you can't compete at this very top level of international sport like the Olympics as a gifted amateur. You have to have the whole envelope of support put around you, and that costs. But I think the investments that we've been making have been paying off. And that really goes right back to the sports scholarships announced in 2000, which went to athletes, went to coaches, administrators, support people at various times. There's been a tremendous step up in the professionalisation of the approach New Zealand takes to the sports, which have played out at the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games.
Prime Minister, what can you hope to achieve from the Air Services negotiation with the Japanese? Might that include access to lower-cost flights?
I think you'll only get lower-cost flights on that route if there's competition on it. At the moment, as you know, Air New Zealand enjoys a monopoly on that route, which is very nice for the bottom line of Air New Zealand, but it means you don't get competition on the fare structure. So it's not really about that, because as the agreement stands at the moment, of course, Japanese airlines are free to come onto the route. The reality is they don't. No, it's really about modernising the agreement.
Going back to the ETS negotiations for a moment, is it the government's current position that the starting points for transport and agriculture are non-negotiable?
Well, we've made announcements about that which have been very firm, but I don't propose today to get into the details of what's been negotiated. That's being talked about in good faith behind closed doors, and that's the way it should stay till the announcement's made.